The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratofsky. This week, we've got our verdict of the most anticipated film release in the geek calendar, the Facebook movie, The Social Network.
We have an idea that we'd like to talk to you about.
They don't want you, they want your idea.
We don't know what it can be, we don't know what it will be, we know that it is cool.
You called me a bitch on the internet.
Doesn't anybody have a sense of humor?
The internet's not written in pencil, Mark, it's written in ink.
Maybe we shouldn't shut it down before we get into trouble.
Stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we?
They came to me with an idea. I had a better one.
Let's sue him in federal court.
If you guys were the inventors of Facebook, you'd have invented Facebook.
Is there anything that you need to tell me?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and watch you write us a check.
Mark! It's gonna be like I'm not a part of Facebook.
You're not a part of Facebook.
Your best friend is suing you for $600 million.
What is that? Frankly, what? So our studio team, everybody except for me, Charles Arthur, Jemima Kish, and producer Scott went to see the Social Network movie at the press preview screening last night, and they report back later on with their verdicts. Welcome, Charles and Jemima.
Hi.
Well, hello.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us after such an exciting evening last night. You're both rosy-faced and grinning ear to ear, just even at the soundtrack of The Social Network.
My status currently says, before, meh. After, oh my God.
And Charles, were you as surprised? Now, I mean, don't give anything away, but...
I was surprised by how much I liked it.
Well, also joining us is Gia Milinovic. Gia worked on The X-Files, I Want to Believe, and previously wrote the production blog for the fantastic Danny Boyle film Sunshine, so she's well-placed to offer her opinion on how social media translates to the cinema. And in fact, Gia, you replied to our invitation to come and review the film with an excitement that is beyond belief, saying that they're your two favorite things.
They are my two favorite things. Yeah, my first job was as a film reviewer. I was a mad film fan when I was a teenager. Also, really into computers. So, yeah, kind of excited to see this film, but I probably had an opinion like you.
Well, Jemima, I know that you've been casting our Silicon Valley Hollywood flick. So, who would you suggest should play the major players in Silicon Valley?
Okay.
For example, Steve Ballmer.
Okay, James Gandolfini.
Right. Yeah. Evan Williams from Twitter.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Really? Steve Jobs.
Robert De Niro.
No, Robert?
Wiley, oh, come
no
on.
Wiley.
No, he'll lose some weight. He'll lose some weight.
No
he'll go
Wiley.
Tough. He'll be good.
No Wiley.
He's got to be really tough. Raging Bull, no?
Steve Jobs.
Yes.
He's a bit mad, isn't he? Anyway, Eric Schmidt.
Tom Hanks!
Not pasty enough.
He'll lose the weight.
Donuts for a year.
What? He'll lose the weight.
I didn't say that. Why doesn't Google Docs work?
Jemima Kish has been blacklisted from any Google service.
I thought Geoffrey Jones as Larry Ellison.
Geoffrey Jones.
He was the dad in Beetlejuice.
Oh, he's awesome!
I think he may have been convicted of something a bit dodgy, but still, I thought the casting was good.
You've just ruined my. Oh, you've ruined everything. And what about
Beetlejuice?
Tom? Everybody's friend.
MySpace Tom, Adam Sandler.
Now that works quite nicely, I think.
This could go on.
Hang on, I've seen MySpace Tom in a film with Adam Sandler. And they didn't look like each other at all.
You've seen them in a... Well done. Yeah. Also this week, what happened when a prosecutor overnight revealed 10,000 ISP users' details when an Iranian nuclear power station's computer system was attacked by a worm virus and when Charles Arthur had a special hands-on preview of the Windows 7 mobile phone? Well... Within 30 minutes, you'll have our take on these stories and on the film that's already being tipped for the Oscars. So it must be good. There. Now, if that's not a reason to keep listening, I don't know what is. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. We begin with this week's news, and first, the computer systems of legal firm ACS Law, which has been pursuing web users who it accuses of committing peer-to-peer piracy, were taken down in a coordinated DDoS, DDoS perpetrated by members of the 4chan online community. Now, 4chan, who claimed to have taken down the RIAA and MPAA's websites as we reported last week, turned their interest on the British Law Group in what has now been called Operation Payback. More worryingly, however, was the 750 megabyte website email backup that was exposed after the attack by the legal firm, which included details of individuals' ISP and email addresses who were being investigated by the firm. Alexander Hampf from Privacy International is on the phone, but first, Alexander, before we come to you, Charles, can you tell us what the latest is on this story?
Well, the latest is that people are analysing these emails. They may be, very personal information. The Information Commissioner has begun an investigation to see whether ACS law can be prosecuted for having exposed personal information, though if they decide that the exposure was as a result of hacking, then it would turn it over to the Interception of Communications officer, who is David Kennedy, who's a judge. It's not quite sure what exactly he could or would do. There are some people who are considering suing ACS Law for harassment because of the letters that have been sent to them. The letters that ACS Law was sending out were based on IP addresses, which it had found where it claimed that people were downloading porn films, among other things. Based on the IP address, they would then get a physical address and send out letters demanding payment. However, there'd been no actual evidence that these people had been doing this. At no point was it tested in court. Some people were paying up, though, so there's credit card details as well in this big email backup. Today, it's turned out that 8,000 details about BSky B broadband customers have been exposed and about 400 PlusNet customers. So it's sort of going beyond just the people who have been targeted by ACS Law. It's really turning into a really great big mess for ACS Law, has to be said.
Alexander, what do you think that the group is trying to do ultimately? It's the physical effect is to take down the website, but do you think that they've got higher motivations, that they've got broader motivations, political motivations, etc.?
No, I don't think so. Certainly with regards to Anonymous, the group who are claiming responsibility for this, they claim they have no leadership. So with regards to any further agenda, I don't see how there could be one, given the fact that there is no leadership to the organization as such. They claim that they're retaliating to a similar tactic which was employed by, or they allege was employed by, members of the entertainment industry in hiring an Indian company to do a denial of services attack against the Pirate Bay.
It's actually strange to note that the exposure of this email backup file, you couldn't really say that the email was hacked as such. It wasn't as if people said, okay, there's an email backup somewhere in ACS Law's website, we're going to hack into it. What happened was they did a DDoS. The website fell over, and in coming back up, this email set was exposed. So in some ways, I would have thought it could be argued that that the ACS Law exposure of this data is actually a mistake by ACS Law. It's not actually something which has come directly out of hacking. And also that the whole 4chan thing of, okay, we're going to DDoS the ACS Law website, that's actually, strangely enough, it's a completely pointless thing. It's not as if ACS Law has been prevented from doing anything. I mean, really, they're lawyers. They operate by sending out letters. They're very much in the physical world. For them, I would have thought the website operating or not operating, it's not really here or there.
It's an astonishing error, though, to put that kind of list on a website. I don't understand why it needed to be on their website.
You raise a very valid point there, Charles. One of the things that are being reported in the press is that this is a result of a hack. Clearly, this isn't a hack. This is the result of the data being stored on a public-facing server and the server not being appropriately brought back up online after the denial of services attack. And that's a very important point, because with regards to the Data Protection Act, the ACS Law have failed to meet Principle 7 of the Act with regards to securing sensitive personal data. From the technical information I've been given by various technical experts, this is a result of the use of cPanel, which is a website kind of management system which is used on remote servers, being used to back up the emails into a public-facing HTML directory.
Alexander, can you tell me what the people who are listed who have been implicated in this can do now?
Well, first of all, obviously they need to find out if they've been involved in this breach. They can do that by either contacting ACS Law or by placing a complaint with the Information Commissioner's Office. We're in the process of drafting a complaint to the Information Commissioner's Office as well, as we announced in our press release yesterday, which will be submitted to the Information Commissioner's Office later this week. We'll be outlining the general concerns of the public as a result of the feedback we've received as well within that complaint. It's a very serious issue. People are incredibly distressed. And in our opinion, certainly mine and Simon, our director, one of the worst breaches of the Data Protection Act ever.
Charles, the attackers appear to be targeting Andrew Crossley in this. Why is he the focus of their campaign?
Well, he's the head of ACS Law. I think that the name of the company comes out of his initials. And what's really bugged them about ACS Law's approach has been the fact that it's been hired by a number of companies which say they own copyrights and that the films that they own or the content that they own is being shared. So ACS Law is basically acting like lawyers do. They're hired to do a job. But the way that they're going about it is that they send out letters which say, we say you did this, now send us some money. Which a lawyer I spoke to said, well, actually, that's what lawyers do. That actually their tactics aren't actually any different from what you would expect to see. For example, you know, many journalists, which I'm on, will know that when you're accused of libel, what happens is that you get a letter from a lawyer generally, which says, you've committed a really horrible libel and now we want lots of money from you because you're really evil and horrible. Please send money to this address. And it's not the sort of thing which enters into much of the way of dialogue. And the dialogue then proceeds once you get your own lawyer and you say, actually, I'm a really nice guy. And it's your client who's the really unpleasant person. But of course, for most people who have been receiving these letters, they're not used to the approach that this sort of approach from lawyers, where they say, hey, you owe some money, now send the money. Some people did pay up because I think they were just sort of frightened, basically. But it has to come up to evidential standards, really, to stand up in court. And that's what's not happened as far as we can find. We can't find any evidence of any of these instances where ACS Law has taken the case to court and where it's been heard in court and where ACS Law has won a verdict in court. If ACS Law knows differently, if they're listening, then we'd be very glad to have a court citation. But another point that it brings up is that under the Digital Economy Act, what ACS Law is doing would be sufficient for Ofcom to issue a warning letter to these people and say, okay, you've now got one strike against you. And the question then becomes, well, what sort of evidentiary standard do you need? And is the Digital Economy Act really up to the job?
Alexander, finally, what is the next step? What can the Information Commissioner actually do?
Well, the Information Commissioner gave a speech this morning on BBC Breakfast News outlining the powers they have. Those powers include the ability to fine up to £500,000 in the case of serious breaches, which this, in our opinion, would certainly fall under. This is a new power that was issued to the Information Commissioner's office earlier this year. This, as far as we are aware, would be the first situation where they would use such powers. Christopher Graham stated this morning that he can't make any comments on the specific case due to the fact that it's currently under investigation, but certainly that in a situation like this, it does look like this is severe enough for them to be able to leverage those powers.
Well, thanks very much, Alexander Hamp from Privacy International. Also this week, a cyber attack hit the Bushehr nuclear power plant in Iran. The Stuxnet computer worm takes over the systems that control industrial plants, and it's believed that the worm was directed at Bushehr to prevent the power station from going online next month. Now, at the time of recording, security experts were still attempting to curtail the sophisticated worm, which appears to have infiltrated the computer system through laptops and USB sticks from Russian nationals who were working there. Charles, what's the full story?
The analysis of the code of Stuxnet suggests that it's been written by some top-flight hackers, so good, in fact, that security experts from companies like Symantec think that the only sort of people who'd be able to do this are government agency people. That is that good. It targets a particular sort of industrial system made by Siemens, and it targets SCADA systems, which are systems control computers. And it's got the ability, once it's loaded via a USB stick, to go and look for these particular systems. It will try to log in. And because a lot of these systems will require a digital key signature, it actually has a valid digital key signature from a Taiwanese company, which seems to have been stolen from the Taiwanese company. This is part of why people think that this is government spook level.
And what does it actually do? So if the plant was online, for example, could we potentially have nuclear meltdown? A Chernobyl experience, for example?
It wouldn't be a Chernobyl experience. What it does is that it interferes with these process systems. So when you're talking about industrial controls, you're talking about something which works in milliseconds or less. So it will interfere with it. It'll take it out and distract it, in effect. It distracts the control system for, say, 10 milliseconds, 20 milliseconds, which, when you're talking about industrial systems, is a lot of time. Which means that, for example, if you have fast-moving parts, such as, say, nuclear centrifuges, then it won't be under control all the time, which can mean that the machine just tears itself apart. It's not a Chernobyl sort of situation, because with nuclear power plants, you always have a safety system where the safety system will come into play as soon as the control goes out. But it is the sort of thing which could mean that you can't trust your fast-moving machinery like that. You can't be certain what's going on.
Gia, please.
I was going to say, I think it's quite exciting, actually. I like the fact that this is happening. It's like, you know, in the past, espionage was really low tech, you know, comparatively. And it's kind of a scary future, perhaps, that I can see. But I quite like the idea that this war is happening with, you know, little USB sticks.
It's planted by the James Bond of the hacking world.
Yeah,
the interesting thing is that if it's come from the Russian, the reason why it would have come from Russian workers is because Russia works a lot with Iran on its nuclear program. Mm-hmm. You know, Iran says that its nuclear program is entirely peaceful; that it's only trying to create nuclear power stations. It's interesting. A lot of people say, "Well, okay, if Iran is the target, because Iran is the place where Symantec has identified the most infections." If Iran is the target, who would benefit? You know, who would have written it? And a lot of people think that the answer there is Israel. And it's quite interesting to compare and contrast Israel's approach when it has near neighbors who have nuclear power ambitions. With Iraq, it simply sent a whole lot of planes over and bombed the place when Iraq was building a nuclear power station. Here it seems to have written a little piece of software which, you know, just lets the place tear itself apart from inside.
It could be anyone. I mean, it could be America as well. You know, if talks aren't working, it might be the next way of trying to halt.
Yep, that's true.
Halt
as well.
It, really.
It's working.
So, I mean, it could be anyone.
The thing about software like this is, you know, it doesn't sort of go around with a passport.
Well, more on this story at guardian.co.uk/technology. Finally, in this week's news, Microsoft will launch its new mobile operating system next month. Cleverly titled Windows Phone 7, consumers can expect to get their hands on it on the 11th of October. However, Charles, you've already had a sneak peek.
Indeed, I have.
And you described it as calm. What does that mean?
Well, if you're trying to use just... I was trying to find ways of contrasting it with other mobile operating systems. For example, I was trying out the Nokia phone systems on the N8 and things, and those I found confusing, and I found them a bit sluggish as well. The iPhone operating system, for example, I would call straightforward. Yeah, it's self-consistent, which is, I think, is always a good thing. And the Windows Phone 7 interface, I think, is calm, which sounds bizarre, but it uses things like, it uses very large typefaces. It indicates when there's more screens to the right or left of the screen by having words which spill over the screen. When you see screenshots of it, it looks really stupid. But actually, when you're using it, it becomes very obvious that, okay, there must be videos across there because you see and you can understand that when you scroll to the right, then you get the videos. It's really interesting. It's just a different way of approaching it.
There's no Flash or HTML. And Jemima, I was wondering...
Well, HTML5.
HTML5, excuse me. Jemima, I was wondering what effect do you think this will have on the final user?
Glaring omission, really. I mean, what is the reason for that? Because it's going to make it a lot harder. I mean, anyone with an iPhone knows how annoying it is to go to a website and then not be able to view a video. And this seems to kind of make that twice as bad, basically. It also doesn't have cut and paste, multitasking, or any support for Macs. The latter might not be that surprising, but Charles, can you enlighten us? Why no decent video support?
Well, I think it'll do Windows Media Video, but possibly not have any beyond it. The reason why it doesn't have HTML5 is because it's built on the Internet Explorer 7 basis. Internet Explorer 7 being quite old, really. It doesn't have Flash because, well, they sort of didn't get around to doing that before. They just had to stop doing the coding and just release it to manufacture. It doesn't have Silverlight either, which is rather surprising. That's Microsoft's own sort of Flash-like plugin. So, yeah, there are some glaring omissions, but the suggestion is that those are all going to be remedied in time.
And Charles, also this week, BlackBerry announced its Playbook. What can you tell us about that?
The Playbook. What a great name for an enterprise tablet. It's going to be a 7-inch tablet. It's going to be, you code for it using either Flash or else using HTML5 and CSS and JavaScript. They're thinking of Playbook as in what American football coaches use, which is, okay, I'm going to log my Playbook and then we're going to run deep bar from the quarterback and then we're going to throw it down the field. Whereas other
that
people
was
think...
That was a great impression.
We just think it's a Playboy typo. supposed to be the implication?
Yeah, something like that. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see what sort of price it has and whether Rim, who are the BlackBerry people, can actually think up some smart apps to use it for, because the iPad does a lot of enterprise sort of things you want already. What are the things that the BlackBerry is going to bring to the game which need to be done on a tablet, which can't be done on an iPad?
The Social Network, a docudrama that follows the rise and rise and rise of the social online networking phenomenon through the impressive... I'm going to stop doing that now. Thank you. Through the impressive success of Facebook, opens this week in US cinemas and arrives in the UK in 2 weeks' time. Now, in the film, the young Mark Zuckerberg lacks social skills, and he apparently sets up the site as a way of hitting back at the high society finals clubs at Harvard. However, and this is where it gets really Hollywood, the Winklevoss brothers, who are members of that high society, suggest that Zuckerberg works on a similar idea with them first. Now, as we now know, the popularity of Facebook goes through the roof and ended up in lawsuits, illustrated in this clip of Zuckerberg giving evidence in front of the Winklevoss twins and their lawyer at a preliminary hearing.
In the 16th email, you raised concerns about the site's functionality. Were you leading them on for 6 weeks?
No.
Then why didn't you raise any of these concerns before?
It's raining.
I'm sorry?
It just started raining.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
No.
Do you think I deserve it?
I had to swear an oath before we began this deposition, and I don't want to perjure myself, so I have a legal obligation to say no.
You don't think I deserve your attention?
I think if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have a right to give it a try, but there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to people lie. You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the offices of Facebook, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including and especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing. Did I adequately answer your condescending question?
You have got to be kidding me! Okay. That was Jesse Eisenberg as Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network. Now, the film reflects the pedigree of its creators, with the screenplay coming from West Wing creator Aaron Sorkin and Fight Club's David Fincher doing the directing. And the cast includes Andrew Garfield and Justin Timberlake.
Trouser Snake.
Good Lord, I can't stop myself from saying it. So let's separate the fact from the fiction. There has been much talk about how The Social Network is really a smear campaign on Facebook's founder, which, Jemima, there was a great tweet from you last night where you said, is Mark Zuckerberg actually supposed to be autistic? I thought it was very funny. Is it actually just an unflattering profile of him, or is this film about the social networking phenomenon, or Gia, is it about business partners falling out?
Well, first I have to say that before I saw it, my opinion was exactly like yours. I so wanted to hate this film. Anything that I'd seen, I thought, this is ridiculous. And, you know, when I'd first heard the Facebook movie, I was exactly what you're thinking. Unfortunately, I thought this film was absolutely brilliant. More than absolutely brilliant. It's one of the best movies that I've seen in years. And I'm not exaggerating.
Everybody around this table is nodding like naughty dogs and sort of just with this grins
Sorry,
on their faces.
It sounds ridiculous. And in fact, you know, listening to those clips, I thought, well, of course that sounds ridiculous. But it grabs you by the hand and drags you along, and you're just sitting there. I mean, you know, Jemima, you were saying you were just leaning forward at one point.
I was literally on the edge of my seat. I was so
engrossed
in
the film. An amazing film.
They've done the impossible. They've taken a film with a story that's essentially about somebody who's quite awkward and shy at talking, who doesn't really say much in public, who is having legal wrangles and sits writing a website. And they've made an hour and a half of really exhilarating, gripping drama about it. It's a miracle, but it's incredibly watchable.
Is Zuckerberg portrayed as an autistic?
He comes across
Asperger's.
As Mr. Spock with Tourette's. You know,
I thought it was really nice, actually. I mean, at first you think he's socially awkward, but I mean, let's face it, most geeks are, really. You know, mm-hmm. You just have to accept the fact.
But
there's a reason why us in this room, why we prefer communicating with screens.
I think that's a very good point. In this room, everybody recognizes and knows at least one geek. we make excuses for the Zuckerberg character. How will non-geeks...
It goes much beyond that cliche, no. though. That would be so easy if they'd done that. It's a much richer characterization than that.
Very layered film as well.
And what about the other characters? What about the other characters? I mean, I would have loved to have been in this production
meeting. They're all horrid.
But when it comes to the synopsis, it sounds to me like a Christmas pantomime. We've got the good guy who's...
That's the fantastic thing about it, is that it's very well nuanced. You know, Zuckerberg, he really dislikes these people who are in the final clubs, which is, you know, something you get into in your final year. And it's a bit like the Bullingdon Club. Sort of imagine it like that. He really dislikes them, but he wants to be in there because when he can get into there, then that means that you've made it. He wants to simultaneously drag himself up and drag them all down. And
this feels
other
like
people
the 1980s, Charles.
I read something last night. I think it was the director who said he wanted to make the Citizen Kane of John Hughes movies. And I think he has.
It is. I mean, we've just been reading the New Yorker review of it. David Denby, who's very good film reviewer and is not given to sort of flights of ecstasy about things, but he says it's a really great film. Has to be said. You know, there's a sequence early on where he's programming it and he's getting all the stuff for it, and it just goes boom, 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 and you sort of get some of the real exhilaration of programming, really good programming, when it's really all just rolling along and you get the output, and that's part of what the film does. Is it take something which is so dull, you know, when you're doing that sort of thing, and it gives you the exhilaration of the experience, but it also does all the personalities, the ups and downs, the ins and outs. You know, that little clip sort of gives you an idea of how Zuckerberg, he doesn't care about it. He knows exactly how much of his attention he wants to give to this lawyer.
It's pretty hard on the women, though, and you have to say the roles for women are pretty dire. There's party scenes where they're smoking bongs and having coke snorted off their chests. There's the girlfriend at the right at the beginning who's really sensible but is quite offended by his kind of sexist, very unskilled conversation and walks out. And then there's a fairly sympathetic lawyer. Other than that, there's two girls that are there when he's dishing out jobs for the website, and he gives them all to all the boys, literally, and the girls say, "And what about us?" He says, "No." And that's it, just cuts them dead.
Well, then that's
the world. And I mean, it is, we have to admit it, that's what it is like. And one thing I found really interesting was in the film, whether it's, you know, reality or not, his life and the world that he was living in kind of mirrors what the web is, if you really think about it. Women are treated really badly and they're objects. It's filled with that kind of college
social
boy
paranoia
mentality as well.
It's a reflection of our age. It's the film of the zeitgeist.
You know, he's this guy who wants to belong, but he wants to belong on his own terms. So he doesn't want to, you know, kind of give in. And that gives him, this socially awkward edge, I suppose. And he wants to get back at his girlfriend who split up with him. And he wants to, you know, prove that that she'll regret splitting up with him. And he comes up with this thing. And I was thinking about it, you know, how many people are motivated by that? You know, do you think, you know, oh, my ex, he split up with me, I'll show them. And so you upload this fantastic picture of yourself on holiday looking great. I saw it as his life and his world, and specifically where he was at, just mirrors what the web has become.
Okay, let's go back to the characters. Let's see if I can wrangle this conversation away from your glowing praise.
None of them are that likable. As Charles said, you know, they're quite nuanced. His best friend, Eduardo Saverin, is quite loyal, but also a bit wet.
And the Winklevosses?
The Winklevoss, I characterise them as like Tweedledum and Tweedledee styled by Calvin Klein. Like they're 6'5".
But only in this
gorgeous
film.
Gorgeous twins, but just almost caricatures because they're so ridiculously good looking.
And Sean Parker, this
Justin Trouser Snake. Yeah, he's obnoxious, actually, and quite kind of up his own arse and a bit paranoid. None of them are that likeable, and actually the only character you come out at the end feeling anything for, certainly respect actually and a lot of curiosity, is Mark Zuckerberg.
Charles, tell me a little bit about how they deal with the real business aspect, the controversies of things like data protection and privacy. Do they even deal with that?
Well, privacy is sort of skimmed past. If you're watching for it, we'll sort of make you go, yeah, uh-huh, that's quite nice. The business things, Eduardo Saverin, who's the friend who gets sort of squeezed out, he's the one who's lawyers thinking, now we have to monetize the site. He's saying this when they're back at Harvard, when it's sort of got about 1,000 people on. He's saying, now we have to monetize the site. And Zuckerberg is always, no, we have to just stay with it. It has to stay cool. And that's very interesting about the tensions that have existed within Facebook. You know, he's saying that this has existed within the site from the start. I mean, it's worth saying that this is based on a book, which itself comes from extensive interviews with Severin and people who are at Harvard. So it's not as if Aaron Sorkin just made it out of, you know, didn't just pop out of his forehead. He had a lot to work from.
Jemima, you've followed Facebook for a long time, and so you know that you know what's happened, effectively. Is it factually accurate, or has it been spruced up?
The story, the plot, the whole film, the tension of the film is built around Zuckerberg's personality. I keep calling him Zuckerberg. Unless we get to know him, we're not going to go that. Obviously, it's been spruced up a bit, but I think my conclusion is that ultimately, it's got to be good news for Facebook. I mean, this is an amazing, amazing, powerful, well-crafted film. And if it comes to define Facebook, whether it's exaggerated or not, I think it's only good for them.
My opinion is rather different from Jemima's. I think that I went into it sort of, you know, pretty agnostic about Facebook, and I came out thinking, these aren't people who you really like, and do you really like the products of people that you don't like?
There's a question for the audience. Do you really like products of people who you don't like?
I want to see the Twitter film now. And the Google film. And the Yahoo film.
Why should somebody pay to see this film instead of downloading it, which I imagine most of their audience is Gia?
Because that's illegal.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm very against downloading films, actually. Okay.
Would it have been better in 3D? Ah, there's the question. The Social Network is released in a fortnight in the UK, so let us know what you think on guardian.co.uk/techweekly if you've already seen it. And let us know after you've seen it, or head to our Facebook page. That's it for this week. Many thanks to our studio team, Charles Arthur and Jemima Kish. Thanks as well to our studio guest, Gia Milinovic. And of course, Alexander Hampf on the phone. Now, last week, we mentioned corporate finance specialist Simon Carmichael, who's the head of private placements and venture sell sides and director at Torch Partners. We mentioned that he would be joining us for a startup surgery session where he'd be answering your questions on refining your proposition to take your business to the next level. Well, we've recorded that and it will now be with you on next week's program instead. So look forward to that. The producer this week was Scott Cawley. I'm Alex Kratosky. See you next Tuesday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.